You don't make up for your sins in the church. You do it in the streets.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The kick-off. The kick-off. The
kick-off. You shit-kicking, stinky, horse manure smelling motherfucker, you!
We rap banks.
I know you know where they are, so tell me. Before I do some damage, you won't walk away from me.
The kick-off. The kick-off. The kick-off.
A sacred knife to the back, guy.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum.
You motherfucker, you.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy? Or are you going to bite?
The kick-off. The kick-off. The kick-off. The kick-off.
What's up, guys? This is Alex Staunch, and welcome to the first edition of The Kick Up, the best obscure gangster movie podcast around. Me and my buddy Zach, we're going to talk about some very obscure gangster movies for you for a couple weeks here on out. We'll see how it goes. Tonight we'll be discussing two really cool films, personal favorites of mine, Performance, which was shot in 1968 but not released till 1970, and it stars Mick Jagger in dual roles. Some really crazy shit going on in this one. It's directed by Nicholas Rigg and Donald Camel. And I will also be discussing later on in the show The Funeral, Abel Ferrara's 1996 classic, starring Christopher Walken, Chris Penn, Benicio Del Toro, Vincent Gallo, and many, many more. You can call in and discuss that with me later on in the show. But first, let's have our co-host do his thing. Zach, are you there? You want to say hi?
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, Zach Attack.
So tell me a little bit about the show.
We'll be going over your favorite gangster true crime classics from both sides of the pond, America and Great Britain.
Warner Brothers presents Performance with Mick Jagger. And Mick Jagger. James Fox. And James Fox.
Good morning, mate.
This is a film about madness.
No soap on the gentleman's collar.
Madness and sanity. A film about fantasy.
How much did you give him?
2/3 of the big one.
That's insane.
The old man was called in the language of Persia.
There's nothing wrong with me. I'm normal.
This is a film about fantasy and reality. And sensuality. A film about death. And life. This is a film about vice. And versa. Performance.
All right, so where to start? This is basically a movie that broke all the rules of any gangster movie before it, and easily stands on its own as one of the best gangster films in history of gangster films. Many, as you might have known in Goodfellas, of the extras in Performance were actual real East End London gangsters. John Binden, who was credited in the movie as Moody, was a real-life British gangster with a very close association with the well-known Cray twins. And he was a right hard bastard. Let's just put it mildly. He was known for starting fights in pubs just to prove what a hard man he was. So, whenever the movie was being finished, the executives at Warner Bros., they were expecting another Beatles Hard Day's Night because it was starring the biggest rock star of the time in performance, Mick Jagger, in his first film role. And whenever they got the final product, legend has it that at the first screening, an executive of Warner Brothers' wife, the wife of an executive, she puked in the middle of the film because of how revolting it was. And like I was saying, this is the quintessential gangster movie of Great Britain. Of course, mind you, there's also such classics as Long Good Friday, Get Carter, Villain, and many, many, many others. But this is just one that I have always loved, and especially the controversy surrounding it. It was a joint effort by both directors, Donald Cammell and Nicholas Reg, and Frank Mazzola on the photography, who basically had done things that were brand new to the game. Lots of fast cutting shots, just so many innovative techniques. And that it had never been done before. It was part gangster film and part psychedelic film, which just doesn't happen. So the main character of the film, James Fox, known as Chaz in the movie, works for an East End of London crime boss known as Harry Flowers, who is very obviously modeled on Ronnie Cray of the Cray Twins, who had been arrested about 2 years before the release of the film. And he wasn't the only gangster movie actor who played a character influenced by Ronnie Cray. There was also, of course, the excellent Richard Burton in the film Villain from 1971, which I would highly recommend for you to check out. It is just straight up a classic, and I couldn't recommend it any higher. But yeah, back to our subject. This film, it really changed the game, thanks to film editor Frank Mazzola's camera work and photography. And, of course, with every male in the movie, there had to be a female, which was played by the at-the-time girlfriend of Keith Richards. Her name was Anita Pallenberg, half German, half Swiss, I believe. And originally, she was dating the man who was one of the original members of the Rolling Stones, named Brian Jones. He became a violent, drug-addicted alcoholic and later died. And she ended up being rescued by Keith Richards from the abusive relationship. So, her and Keith Richards had been together for a while. And on the set of performance, her and Mick Jagger apparently started getting very intimate with each other, which irritated Keith to no end. There were reports of him lurking around the set of the movie, basically just brooding, and caused a rift between band members, big time. Let me summarize the movie for you. Okay, so basically, the boss of the East End of London crime rackets is, like I said before, a man named Harry Flowers. And he runs protection rackets. And for those of y'all not in the know, a protection racket is where a group of gangsters go into a business. Flowers runs a protection racket. And he basically has a cold-blooded enforcer named Chaz. who was played by James Fox. And let me tell you, he is a sadistic bastard who enjoys frightening the pants off of people. The movie starts off with a politician being brought to court on charges of conspiring with a gangster, the man I mentioned to you earlier, Harry Flowers. And he shortly afterwards paid a visit by Chaz, Flowers' most brutal henchman, and told, if you mention my boss, Flowers' name, in the next court case, you're going to wind up in a wheelchair. See, Chaz's specialty is intimidation. So, basically, the politician agrees that he will not mention the name of Mr. Flowers. And just to kind of reinforce the point that things can go very wrong if the politician decides to mention Mr. Flowers' name, his chauffeur is kidnapped by some of Harry Flowers' thugs. And they pour acid all over his prized Rolls Royce and then shave the chauffeur's head. And basically, the politician gets the message. So, after that, we see the boss, Harry Flower, going into his next venture, taking over a betting shop owned by a man known as Maddox. And him and Chaz, played by James Fox, have a bit of a history together. They used to be friends, and they had a falling out. So, at the next business meeting of the Flowers gang, he lets all of his crew know that he's going to be taking over Flowers' betting. He's going to be taking over Joey Maddox's betting shop. And Chaz, being the sadistic bastard who enjoys inflicting pain, says and offers, I'll do it, no problem. And boss Harry Flowers says, no, you and Joey have a history. Y'all were friends, and things went sour, and now y'all hate each other. So don't get personal feelings mixed up in business. Sure enough, Chaz disobeys his boss. And from there, things go south. On his way home that night to his flat, Chaz is attacked by thugs led by Joey Maddox, the man whose shop was being attempted to be taken over by Harry Flowers. And Maddox and his thugs beat and humiliate Chaz. And Chaz somehow manages to escape and murder Mr. Maddox in self-defense, which completely went against his boss's orders, so he has to go on the run. Well, he ends up at a hippie commune in an impoverished area of London. And I'm not going to spoil too much, but he basically winds up in an environment that involves taking a lot of drugs, mushrooms, smoking pot, and from there on, time blurs and identities begin to merge between the resident of the hippie commune, Mick Jagger, also known as Turner in the movie, and his lover, Fervor, played by Anita Pallenberg, Keith Richards' girlfriend, and one other woman, a young French girl known as Lucy in the movie, played by Michelle Breton. So, from there on, we have basically a complete merging of identities. Mick Jagger's character is a burnt-out rock star who is past his prime and just he's jaded, doesn't have what it takes anymore to get back into the game. And he sees in Chaz, the brutal East End gang enforcer, what he needs to get his quote-unquote demon back. So from there on, basically becomes a very psychedelic merging of identities. I'm not going to go much further, but definitely check it out.
Catch Zach next time on the show. He'll be focusing on more of the Across the Pond films, whereas, you know, I'll be sticking to more of the American underrated classics, so to speak. And always find us on Facebook at The Kick Up. You want to sign off, man?
This is your boy Zach Attack of The Kick Up, and have a great day.
One of my all-time favorite gangster movies. I remember watching this when it came out. It was like, I guess, at our movie rental place at the time, they had like the new release section, but it was kind of a lower rent video store. So, you know, we didn't get the big budget titles at the time. This is like the straight to video revolution. Well, a little bit after. This is like in the late 90s. And I remember just seeing so many good things, especially from October films back in the day. And I remember very specifically one night renting not only The Funeral, but this really weird movie called Painted Hero with Dwight Yoakam. He plays a circus clown who winds up with a vampire and some other weird shit. I might have to talk about that one, even though it has nothing to do with what we're doing here. But The Funeral, that one also stuck out. It was quite the double feature. This movie is just very somber. It's very underrated. It's one of the most depressing takes on gangster films, on the gangster genre in general. It was produced by Annabella Sciorra, who also stars in the film. And a lot of the cast went on to be in Sopranos. Damn near most of the cast went on to star in Sopranos. Very strange. The standout performances, not only from Chris Penn, one of his best, but also from Benicio Del Toro and Christopher Walken. I know, you know, people can say, oh, Christopher Walken, standout performance in this and this and that and that. He's really great in this. The vengeful, horrifying, very caring gangster.
Killed my brother. Maybe one day they're gonna find me with my blood draining into the sewer. And when I'm dead, I'm gonna roast in hell. I believe that. But the trick is, get used to the idea. While we're here, cuz...
Any fans out there, go ahead and call in.
In a place of corruption.
We're just a bunch of street punks. Nobody's watching us.
Fuck! We're free!
In a time of change.
Every new idea, every movement forward, was at one time or another criminal and outlaw.
Three brothers shared a dream of power.
It's a war. And it's costing both sides a great deal of money.
Sounds to me like, you're trying to bust up the union.
One led.
What's our interest in this?
It's a good deal.
One followed.
We take the money.
One died.
You're really concerned about the workers. Let them take the deal.
Yeah, right, right.
You know what you're doing?
What?
You're looking for trouble.
From acclaimed director Abel Ferrara, America's most daring and controversial filmmaker.
I'm not asking for nothing, but my brother's killer, his motivation does not interest me.
Christopher Walken.
If I do something wrong, it's because God didn't give me the grace to do what's right.
Annabella Sciorra.
They're criminals, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing romantic about it.
Chris Penn.
Kill them. 22 years old, they killed them.
Isabella Rossellini.
You want to talk?
Benicio Del Toro.
I had nothing to do with your brother's death.
And Vincent Gallo. Blood was their bond.
Killing somebody else is not going to bring him back.
Remember one thing. He's not your flesh and blood.
And the beginning of their end.
You can't be trusted. You are not trustworthy.
What would you have me do?
Aye.
The Funeral.
Once you pull a trigger, there's no going back.
A film by Abel Ferrara.
Hey, guys. Thanks for sticking around. I am Alex Staunch, and this is the first edition of The Kickup. You know, it's a little something different I'd wanted to do to talk about some of my favorite gangster movies and, you know, mafia movies, organized crime, you know, all that type of shit. Anything that's kind of like, I guess, organized crime to do is something I'll shine a light on. There's a lot of these old movies that I'm just big fans. I'm a huge fan of, and you never really get any light shed on them throughout the years. And I've always kind of wondered why. This one especially, The Funeral, 1996, from cult director Abel Ferrara. I think he's most well known for like Bad Lieutenant, you know, not the Nicolas Cage one, but the Harvey Keitel film. That one was crazy. I don't know if you guys ever seen that, Brace Yourself. And I think the first thing I remember seeing from Abel Ferrara, I think he did like a Body Snatchers movie or something. But I remember seeing Driller Killer when I was really young, and I didn't realize it was the same guy till years and years later. As I stated earlier in the show, I stumbled upon this one at a video store here in town some point in the 90s. And it wasn't, you know, well sought after. Christopher Walken was on the cover at the time as the main lead, so that was still something back then. And, you know, I remember being a kid, and I would rent these movies that I knew I wouldn't understand, but I would like to see these actors do their thing, especially Christopher Walken. You put him on the cover, and there you go, I got it. So I went home that night with another weird-ass movie, and I remember just being enthralled with this movie. It was so depressing from the get-go. The film starts with one of the leads, played by Vincent Gallo, watching a movie in the theater. So immediately you settle in with them, because that's exactly what you're doing. You're watching a movie. And then it cuts to the funeral scene. You don't know whose funeral just yet. And it's playing Gloomy Sunday by Billie Holiday, possibly the saddest song in history. No shit. If you haven't heard that, go check it out. Gloomy Sunday by Billie Holiday. And that kind of sets the mood for the entire movie. It's a period gangster movie. So, you know, they got all the old cars. They got all the costumes just nailed. It's supposed to be the 1930s. Everything is spot on except for some child acting that, you know, luckily there's not too much of it. Let's see. The cast of the film. We got Christopher Walken playing Ray, the oldest brother. Chris Penn, Chez, who is the middle brother. And the youngest brother, Vincent Gallo, played by Johnny. And then you got, you know, the wives, Annabella Sciorra, Isabella Rossellini, two very underrated actors. I realize that they are not underrated, but by what I mean by they say that, you don't ever hear their names anywhere. And you should. We all should. And then you got Benicio Del Toro as the antagonist, Gaspar. And you got, it's rounded off by a who's who of gangster movies. You got Gretchen Mol, John Ventimiglia, you know him as he was the chef. You know, he had the restaurant in Sopranos. There's a whole bunch of people from Sopranos, actually, that popped up in this. Paul Hipp, Victor Argo. I mean, it's a who's who. Like I said, there's Gregory Pirelli. Everyone is in this. And here's a quick synopsis. Let's see. In the 30s in New York, the coffin of the leftist gangster Johnny Tempio, and that is, you know, Vincent Gallo's character, is brought to the house of his older brother, Ray, for the wake of his family and friends. Ray is a cold gangster that likes to read and is married to Jean. That is Annabelle Sior. His brother Chez is a hothead that runs a bar, and that is Chris Penn, and he's married to Clara. Ray decides to revenge the murder of his younger brother and believes that the gangster Gaspar is the one who killed Johnny. Meanwhile, Chez has a breakdown with tragic consequences for the Tempio brothers. Now, I mean, that synopsis right there, if you have the right actors in that story, you got a great film, and that's exactly what happened here. The cast is just, you can't really, I guess it's an ensemble, but, you know, considering that you got your brothers, you got your bad guys, you got your wife character, it's a little bit of everything, and it kind of mixes in to one of the most unique gangster films ever made. Let's see here. There's a few things that got out, you know, about the production over the years. A few little fun facts, I suppose. In 2009, Empire Magazine named The Funeral number 16 in a poll of the 20 greatest gangster movies you've never seen, probably. And I've seen that list. And there's a lot of great shit on that list, actually. But The Funeral, number 16 and 20, should have been a little better than that. Five actors in this film went on to appear in The Sopranos. John Vitamilia, Annabella Ciora, Frank John Hughes, Edie Falco, and Joseph R. Gonzoli. I forgot Edie Falco was in this, that's right. Benicio del Toro and Christopher Walken were in Basquiat the year before, 1995. Christopher Walken's good in that movie, of course. From that's Benicio del Toro was the better performance, in my opinion. And they would go on to work together again in Excess Baggage, 1997, the year later. So that's 3 years, three movies, some better than others. Excess Baggage is horrible. I don't know if y'all ever saw that. I remember I went to see that in a dollar theater, and I think I left. It was pretty bad. Pretty bad. Johnny is the youngest of the three brothers, while Chez is the middle child. However, Chris Penn was, in fact, 4 years younger than Vincent Gallo. Oh, shit. As far as performances, I know earlier I was saying, you know, this is one of Christopher Walken's best, and I know that is something people say about every one of his movies. This one, I guarantee you watch it, and you'll come out a little more afraid of Christopher Walken. It's almost like if this character went on to sort of to keep living, he would have been the Joe Dirt guy. You know? That's what I like to think anyways. Although I'm pretty sure Abel Ferrara would have me killed if you heard me say that. Abel Ferrara is quite the eccentric director. He is well known to being like that guy everyone wants to work with, but is hell to work with. He, from everything I've seen, he did a commentary on King of New York, another Christopher Walken film. I loved it. You know, I thought it was great. And I watched the commentary and he hated it. Couldn't hate it anymore. And you kind of get into his head and he doesn't want that. He doesn't want anyone in his head. And he lets it know. I looked up some old interviews about this film in particular, and there's some funny stuff. Let me see, where is this at? Yeah, like the guy asked him about the budget. He says, "What does it matter, man? Why does everybody always talk about the bread? I can make $20 million look like $200, or I can make $500,000 look like $10 million." And he actually can. And you can make $10 million look like 50 cents. So who cares? I don't even know how much this film costs. It's a gangster film set in the 30s. That's the scale of the production. So, I mean, that's it's a pretty damn big scale. And it's a pretty big production. And he also commented that he's dealing with psychotic actors and their neurotic agents and their lunatic managers. And so, even just pre-production had him going through hell for this one. And, you know, you watch the movie and it looks so real. Everyone looks miserable and like hot in the houses and the clothes look uncomfortable. Everyone seems like they kind of went method, even though, you know, even if they didn't want to, I suppose. Let's see here. Aside from Christopher Walken, that's what I was getting at. He's really great in the movie. Chris Penn. I know, I guess when I think Chris Penn, aside from this movie, I think Nice Guy Eddie, you know, Reservoir Dogs. He's really great in that movie. He was badass in Footloose. I don't care what anyone says. Footloose was Chris Penn's movie. I really liked him in what's that fucking movie? To Wong Fu, of course, as the cop. I like his comedic stuff. That gangster movie, what was it? With Chris Kattan. It's like a comedy. I can't remember what the hell it's called right now. Corky Romano, yeah, there you go. He was great in that movie. And another film that he played another a criminal in was The Boys Club, where he escapes from jail, he's shot, hides out in these kids' clubhouse, and then when they come back to it, he kind of manipulates them and whatnot. You can find out all about that film over on Staunch TV. That is my YouTube channel, youtube.com/staunchTV. There's a series I do called Staunch on Film, and I cover that movie, and I talk to actor Jared Blanchard, who was a supporting character in that movie. Jared was also, he was Henry Bowers in the original It miniseries. He's a great actor, especially in the Boys Club. But even that movie was just overshadowed by Chris Penn's performance. But damn, nothing compares to him in The Funeral. He, as I said, he's a bar owner. He's there to try to, throughout the movie, he's kind of the glue that holds everything together. You get a hint of his anger in the very beginning when he sees his brother in the coffin. He just loses it. And from then on, you realize you got these powerhouse actors all trying to outdo each other, and it's so fucking great. There's a scene where they're trying to, you know, some drama goes down, and to kind of defuse the situation, Chris Penn sings a song, and it's actually Chris Penn doing it. Now, we got my buddy here running the show, Chucky. He's going to play us the track of Chris Penn singing the song, Tonight is the Night. Check it out.
I walked into the room. I've been a million times. I feel somebody move. Is it you or heart of mine? Wow. I'll let the kids out.
Yeah, wasn't that just beautiful? Chris goddamn Penn, who would have thought the pipes on that guy? Play that again. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. But yeah, I like that song. That's one of my favorites. I wish they would have done a better version of it, but that's actually, damn, you know, that's actually not a bad version in its own. I think I might have to rip that up. So yeah, Chris Penn, he plays like the middle brother, and he like I said, he was the glue of the whole movie, and you kind of see him kind of go unhinged, you know, losing his brother and not being able to do anything about who he thinks is guilty, who is, you know, Benicio del Toro's character. Now, let me get things a little more straightened out for you if you've never seen the movie. So there's three brothers. They're part of a crew. The youngest brother isn't really, you know, part of their mafia lifestyle or whatever. He's more of a, they say leftist. It's polite to say communist. They're communists. And the guy that's leading the Communist Party is actually, I forget his name, the actor, he was in The Warriors, the guy banging the bottles. Warriors, you know that guy? He has a really, really cool monologue, a really powerful monologue in this movie. Everyone is just trying to outdo everyone in this movie. And so, you know, him speaking really gets Vincent Gallo's character going. And him and his buddy, they're trying to get the union going, and they're on the union bus, whereas his literal family is, they're working with the other crew in town run by Benicio del Toro and his little mob, you know, and they're trying to outbid the workers union. You know, I think it's like trash, you know, the typical stuff, you know, typical utilities and whatnot. And they're trying to outbid them. They're trying to take it over. They're trying to come up with some sort of an agreement to basically undermine the union, which was a real issue back then. And this is a big problem. You know, you got Vincent Gallo trying to ride the fence as much as possible, but it doesn't happen. He has a big mouth. He's known throughout the movie through starting shit. And that's all told through flashbacks. As I said, the movie starts with the funeral. You see Vincent Gallo dead as soon as after you see him watching a movie. He's a big movie guy. And so he's dead. You know, the movie starts just so sad. It's a funeral. Chris Penn loses it. Nobody knows what's going on. Christopher Walken is enraged whenever Benicio Del Toro's crew sends flowers. And he is convinced that they are responsible, but there's nothing he can do, being made men and all. So this is running through everyone's head, and they don't know what's going on. They know that their brother was a hothead. You know, Johnny was a hothead. Everyone knows it. But they think that they were untouchable. Shouldn't have happened. You know, shouldn't have happened the way it did, at least. So, you know, they're not able to keep their mouths shut. And tempers kind of get out of hand. And there's a murder there at the bar. Things happen. And it's not good. And so it all, you know what, I'm going to give you a spoiler warning right now. If you don't want the end of the movie spoiled, I am not going to be angry if you stop listening. Well, if you do stop listening, you know, why don't you go over to youtube.com/staunchTV and subscribe. All kinds of good stuff on there. That's my YouTube channel. Go and subscribe. Go right now and hit that little subscribe button. All kinds of good shit on there. I do things about music, film, movies. I got actors from all types of movies, directors from all types of movies coming on and talking. Lots of good stuff. And if you're going to stick around, we're going to have some spoilers. So, eventually, they decide that, yeah, that Benicio Del Toro, Gaspar, he's guilty. And after he murders one of the friends there at the bar, they decide they can't handle it. They can't have that. So, a vengeful Christopher Walken, Raymundo, Ray, they end up kidnapping Gaspar. And then they have him tied up. It's the whole gangster interrogation scene. This has everything, like I said. And they end up murdering him. They kill him because they're convinced that he killed their younger brother, you know. And it's then that it's shortly after, you know, Christopher Walken gets a call. He finds out, you know, they have the guy. They have the guy that did it. It's a little too late for old Gaspar. But, you know, Christopher Walken, he's business as usual. And it turns out it was a kid. It was a young nobody, just a poor kid who got smacked around by Johnny. You know, he was with a girl, and he made him look stupid in front of her. You know, weeks back, no one even really knew about it. He decided he ain't going to have it. So he got it when he was leaving the theater. He shot his ass and killed him in the street like a dog. And he's been in hiding ever since. And they had tortured through some pretty harsh means. They wound up finding out that he was guilty. And he's all messed up. He's all beat up by the time that Christopher Walken gets a hold of him. Of course, Christopher Walken tells him that he raped his girlfriend. And, you know, Christopher Walken throughout the movie is dealing with his relationship with God and the afterlife, and his wife's trying to talk him down, the great Annabella Sciorra. Christopher Walken basically accepts that he is a monster, and he is there to do monster shit. And so by this point, he's hearing out this kid, and he has sympathy for him. You know, his girl got raped, and he got taken, and got used up. Christopher Walken has sympathy for him, but Christopher Walken, being Christopher Walken, with one of the greatest lines in the movie, says, "Tell me the truth." Kid says, "I told you the truth." Christopher Walken says, "Now tell me like God hears it." And then, of course, that gets the kid to confess what happened, you know, about getting beat up in front of the girl, getting embarrassed, and then eventually taking it out with a gun. Oh, man, it's crazy. Christopher Walken kills this kid. And the ironic part about that is that earlier in the film, there's a flashback to when Christopher Walken was about as old as that kid was, getting taken to a barn back in the homeland, whatever, you know, by his gangster father. And there's a guy tied up, and his gangster father gives a young Christopher Walken the gun, says, "This guy was stealing from us. If we let him go, it's up to you if we let him go. But if you kill him, you're doing the family a favor. If you don't, he's going to steal from someone else, might steal from us again, and that's on you." So he basically forces this little kid into murder. And full circle, you know, growing up, it's the other way around, unfortunately, but he's the one killing the kid. It's pretty crazy stuff. There's a lot to this movie. And, you know, he wrote it. It was written by Nicholas St. John, which is another Abel Ferrara collaborator and a heavy-duty screenwriter. Man, I don't know how he does it. Music by Joe Delia, great, top-notch score. It's kind of hard to find, but it's out there. You can find this movie. It got kind of shit out on DVD, and it got a really nice October Films VHS back when, I remember. But you've seen some weird DVDs. Like, I've seen like a Hallmark Pictures, like at some point had the rights, put out like a Hallmark. There was like a Hallmark logo on the cover. It was weird. But you can find it. It's on. You'll find like those 50 gangster movies on one disc. A lot of times it's there. And then, so basically, after all that happens, you know, Christopher Walken goes home, and Chris Penn loses it, and he goes on a rampage with a gun and kills everybody pretty much in the end. He has completely lost it. And then, you know, just before that, he had forced himself on a young girl, and Chris Penn is just unhinged in this movie, and he is fucking scary too. Everyone's horrifying in this movie, I tell you. And the camera will just sit there; it'll stay in one spot and watch these people just explode. It is so cool, and they're all wearing '30s clothes. The music is on point. The lighting is off, but it's off purposely, and it looks beautiful. It is one of my all-time favorite movies, obviously. I guess you can tell. The critical reception was kind of interesting. Reception from critics was positive, as The Funeral holds a 79% rating on Rotten Tomatoes based on 34 reviews. Not bad. Roger Ebert gave The Funeral 3 stars out of 4, which is a big deal, it being a gangster movie with, you know, violence and there's a rape scene in it, as I said, and it got 3 out of 4 from Roger Ebert. That is unheard of. Janet Maslin, writing in the New York Times, gave it a positive review, calling it hot-blooded and well-acted. I mean, damn. Ken Tucker, writing in Entertainment Weekly, gave the film a positive review, calling it fine, thoughtful, and jolting. All of these reviews are spot on. A review in Empire gave the film 4 stars out of 5, praising the complex characters and impressive cast. Now, that's for sure. No doubt about that. Let's see here.
And we do have a caller.
We have a caller. All right. That's what I was about to ask. Do we have a caller? Put him on, Chucky.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
361-549.
Hey, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, this is John C. Tatum from Corpus Christi, Texas.
John C. Tatum from Corpus Christi, Texas. How you doing, buddy?
Yes, sir. How you doing, my friend? Good, good, good.
Say, we had about 15 minutes or so. What do you want to talk about, man? I know we were talking about The Funeral, but I'd like to hear about maybe some of your favorite films. What do you got?
Sure. You guys have been talking about some like more underrated movies that I want to check out, but I'd like to actually talk about a movie that's a little more well-known, but from a point of view that a lot of people probably don't look at it. I want to talk about Scarface, the 1983 remake.
Nice.
One of my favorite films of all times, man. Honestly, first of all, the fact that it's a remake is kind of mind-boggling. A lot of people don't realize that it's a remake of a 1932 movie based on Al Capone.
Yeah.
The fact that the remake is so fucking great that people know the remake more than the original already speaks volumes. But
yeah.
When a lot of people think of Scarface, they tend to think about, you know, like cocaine and the gunfights and the chainsaw scene, which is all badass stuff that makes the movie, you know, intriguing and entertaining. But I see this movie as a very good, like, historical period piece that gives us a good view of U.S. history in the early 1980s. It particularly gives us a good view of the Cold War, gives us an idea of what life was like for Cuban immigrants. Tony's family in particular gives us a pretty good insight of that. I really liked it. At the beginning, they include that footage of Castro actually speaking as he's sending these immigrants to the U.S., and that when Tony's being interrogated as he's entering the country, he brings up the fact that Jimmy Carter is all about human rights, and it's kind of Castro's kind of being a smart ass, sending all these immigrants over saying, okay, you don't want to be here, we don't want you, we don't need you, go over there where Jimmy Carter is going to promise you all these human rights. And of course we see from Tony's family that it's actually very much of a struggle for people here in the United States as well. You know, Tony, of course, is this guy who just kind of says, fuck it. He wants to get as much money as he can at any cost. He's willing to deal drugs and kill anyone he needs to and do whatever it takes to gain the wealth. That's his idea of the American dream. One of my favorite characters from this movie, though, is Tony's mom. You know, she's just kind of old school. Yeah, she's this old school Cuban lady. She won't take his blood money. She says, who did you kill for this, Antonio? You know, she's not taking that shit. And I love that line when she says, it's Cubans like you who give us a bad name.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, the mom's the biggest victim. The biggest victim in the whole movie. She loses everything. Shit.
Yes. There's a lot of depth to this character, man, that gets overlooked. And then Gina just this kind of young lady who is just very sheltered and is just kind of going along with whatever her mom says, trying to make everybody happy. And from my point of view, Gina is Tony's like view of what innocence is. He just sees her as this perfect, uncorrupted person, and he wants to help her out, of course. So he gives her this money to help her out. But then Gina, you know, being naturally, she sees that, hey, I'm living in Miami. There's a nightlife out there. There is drugs. There's guys that want to make out in bathrooms. There's clubs. Whatever the fuck, she wants to go do that. And then when Tony sees that, he sees her being like him, you know, out at the club doing the same things he's doing, he kind of loses his shit. And then, of course, later on also with Manny, when he sees her with Manny and doesn't realize they're married, he kills Manny. I think that's just a symbol of Tony just really seeing what he sees as innocence being corrupted by what he considers to be the American dream. Another cool aspect of this movie, dude, I want to bring up that I've been thinking about a lot is, like, when he goes to meet with Sosa in Bolivia, and Sosa, it's like some kind of last minute, he's like, hey, I'm glad he can make it or whatever. If you pay attention to the people there at that meeting, when he's trying to tell, he's like hiring Tony for the hit on that guy in New York, that kind of leads to Tony's downfall. You remember that when he like had to put the bomb under the car and shit?
Yeah.
So brings him to Bolivia, and he meets with a guy representing Washington, D.C. from the U.S. government, and then a man who is representing some sugar corporation. And that's his dude. Very representative of U.S. interests in South and Central America during the Cold War. They had all kinds of financial interests, particularly through sugar and fruit companies, and they're willing to deal with all kinds of shady characters. They didn't give a fuck if it's a drug kingpin or whoever to secure their financial interests. And it's very representative there that these guys are willing to sit down with Sosa as he tells this guy, hey, you need to go to New York and kill this guy. And then I think that kind of brings a whole other aspect to this movie that I think is really wonderful to get overlooked, man. That it's just a really good tragedy.
In that moment,
dude,
we
see through the whole movie, Tony like has to work his way up to the top and work his way to wealth. And then when he has to sit there in his car and watch this lady and his kid get in the car with this guy, he has to make a personal choice. All that shit he worked for, that money, that wealth, the tiger, the lady tiger, all that goes out the fucking window. He has to make a choice right there for himself. Am I going to kill this lady and this kid because it's fucking part of my life now? And when he makes that personal choice to say no and betrays all the bullshit to get to where he is, that's what leads to his downfall. And then we watch him completely break down and get killed.
I've always kind of felt like when I first got into that movie, I was like, oh, this movie's about an immigrant who comes to America, kind of gets his life going, does a lot of, he gets on the top, and then he does a lot of coke and fucks it all up. That's kind of what I got. But then it wasn't until I got older that I realized there's a lot more to it. And that I think all the political stuff definitely came from Oliver Stone writing the script. I think his whole point of view is throughout the whole, you know, him being a reporter and investigative journalist and all that, it definitely shines through the story. And if you think about Scarface without all those scenes, like the opening, you know what I'm saying, when he's being interrogated, if they didn't stay so long in the camp, I feel like if that movie were done now, it wouldn't feel epic. You know what I mean? That Scarface was epic, you know? And it's like, I know they're thinking about remaking it again, which I hope, fingers are crossed, of course, but I don't know, man. I don't think they have the balls to do that. Like,
they've been talking about it for
long.
Years. It hasn't happened yet, so hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't.
Yeah, I know, man. Yeah, I don't think they'd do a movie that long on that scale with, like, based on star power, you know? It's just not a thing that happens anymore. But it definitely stands out on its own. I remember watching the original after that. You seen the original, I imagine?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that movie's pretty badass, too. It's almost, like, more violent. It's strange. But it's like that. Yeah, of course, that movie has nothing to do with, the strife of the immigrants and whatnot. Not like this one.
And Al Capone and Prohibition.
Yeah, yeah. Aside from Scarface, what's some other of your favorite movies?
Oh, also and The Godfather. Zach on the show, me and him are actually good friends. Once he told me that they already be doing this show and they invited me to call in, it was just an offer I couldn't refuse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
Nah,
anytime.
I'm real big on The Sopranos, Goodfellas.
Oh yeah,
you
yeah.
Know, all the classics, you know.
Yeah, I was just talking about that earlier. How most of the cast, like the fill-out cast in The Funeral, popped up in Sopranos in some form or another. Like nearly everybody. It's so strange.
I actually never heard of that movie before, but hearing y'all talk about it, it's making me really want to watch it.
Yeah, dude, it's really cool. Like, it's not like there's. If I were to tell you, like, it's all acting. You know what I'm saying? It's all just. There's so much good acting in it. As far as like set pieces and big action, you know, there's nothing like that really, but it's just so cool to see it. Everyone's in period costumes. Everyone's just like top notch. I don't know how else to put it. It's been a favorite of mine for years. Next week, or actually we're going to be doing the show bi-weekly. So you'll have like a week, you know, maybe if you want to check out the movies we're going to do and give us a call. That'd be awesome, man.
Sounds cool, man. Absolutely.
I think the next review I'm doing, Zach, he kept it a secret. We're gonna see, but my next one is gonna be Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. That is a 1997 movie, also starring Vincent Gallo and Kiefer Sutherland. It's his only movie he's ever directed, Kiefer Sutherland. It's a pretty strange movie. It is a blatant Tarantino ripoff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty blatant. There's stuff taken straight out of all of his movies. It's ridiculous. I don't know, but it's still pretty interesting. It's like, you know, you don't see Kiefer Sutherland talking about it for a reason. I'll say that. But yeah, that'll be in another 2 weeks. So, you know, if you want to join us back then, man, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'll be glad to chime in. Hey, thanks for having me on, man.
Yes, sir. Thanks for calling, man. Take it easy.
Y'all have a good night.
All right. So as you heard, in another week, we're going to probably replay this one next week, but I'm going to be gearing up to talk about Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 1997, directed by Kiefer Sutherland, and it's also starring Kiefer Sutherland, and Vincent Gallo, Kevin Pollak, Grace Phillips, and how do you say this guy? Mykelty Williamson. Let's just say Bubba from Forrest Gump, that guy. And also Rod Steiger, John C. McKinley. It's a pretty crazy movie. It's a very wacky movie. As I said, this is whenever everyone was trying to be Tarantino. Everyone was trying to do the next Pulp Fiction, the next Reservoir Dogs still, even though it was like 6 years later. It was what was happening in like indie cinema, indie with the quotes, because it wasn't quite indie at this point. But they were still trying, and they tried all the way up until the mid-2000s, pretty much. You still see it from time to time. I think I might do a Tarantino ripoff segment every now and then. The first one being the next episode about Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Our co-host Zach will be talking about something from across the pond, I'm sure. I hope it's Villain, because that movie's awesome. He has a lot to say about that, I'm sure. So, be sure to go...
Do you have time for another caller?
Another caller? I don't think so. Is there someone calling?
There is.
Okay, well, let's put them on then. If it's all right, we have 5 minutes.
Real quick. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes?
Are you there? Hello? Is this Joe Pesci?
The caller has dropped.
The caller dropped. Joe Pesci will call back the next episode. Anyways, you don't have to be afraid. You can call and talk. We have like 5 minutes. We could have got a whole conversation out. So pretty much, our next episode, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. But you can always keep up with me at Staunch TV. That's youtube.com/StaunchTV. Go and subscribe. Got all kinds of cool shit on there. Let's see, I believe I recently put up Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead 30 Years Later featuring star Keith Coogan. We got a lot of stuff coming up with him. I did The Rise and Fall of Green Jelly. There's a lot of... I did Jumping at the Boneyard 21 Years Later. I just recently finished my Black Circle Boys series. There's all kinds of cool shit on there. Go and check that out. And you can also catch me with... on MontSnapRadio.com, Lost in the Staunch, every Wednesday. But do not forget, Thursdays, the show's biweekly, Thursdays here on World Generation Podcast, The Kick Up. Do not miss an episode. It's been great chatting with you. And special thanks to Chucky over here for helping out. Thanks, buddy. And I will see y'all later.
You don't make up for your sins in the church. You do it in the streets.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The Kick Up. The Kick Up. The
you
Kick Up.
You shit-kicking, stinky, horse manure smelling motherfucker, you.
We rap banks.
I know you know where they are, so tell me. Before I do some damage, you won't walk away from
The Kick Up. The Kick Up. The Kick Up.
So say goodnight to the bad guy.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum.
You motherfucker, you!
Are you gonna bark all day, little doggy? Or are you gonna bite?
The Kick Up, the Kick Up, the Kick Up. The Kick Up.
This has been a presentation of the World Generation Podcast Network.